You are listening to the Punk News Podcast, episode 234. Welcome to the Punk News Podcast. I'm Adam White, recording for you in my basement in Niagara Falls, Ontario. Joining me on tonight's show, out of Philadelphia, PA, Mr. John Gentile. Hi, John.
What's going on, Adam? My fellow countrymen.
Is it?
Well,
this,
yeah.
This is Manifest Destiny run wild, I think.
No, Adam, I'm talking about the old country. The old country.
Oh.
We will always be countrymen, no matter how many the seas, nor how many artificial, invisible borders separate us, Adam. We will always be countrymen.
You're referring to Italy.
I'm referring to Italia. Italia.
You realize that by the time that our families had any sort of intersection on that end of the world, Italy was like 17 different nation states.
You know, Adam, you and I could be distant brothers. Have you ever thought about that?
I don't know if that's how genetics work, but maybe. Also joining us on tonight's show, Mr. Dominic Davi of Alternative Tentacles. Hi, Dominic.
Hey, how's it going, guys? The show got way more patriotic than I thought it was going to be right out of the gate.
Oh, yeah, this is all about patriotism all the time. and Dominic, where are you out of tonight? Where are you joining us from?
I am joining you from Oakland, California.
There we go. John, you were from Oakland once, were you not?
No, I used to live down in Santa Clara, which is near San Jose, which is close to Oakland and San Francisco and Santa Cruz.
From space, it's all the same place.
From space, is all the same.
From space, we're all in one big landmass.
So, John, I'm going to throw this over to you here.
So we are here. Listen, Punk News listeners, we are here with the man behind the man behind the man. We are here with Dominic Davi, another fellow Paisan, another fellow Italian. He's Sicilian. It's all good. This is the Italian podcast tonight. We are here with Dominic Davi. And let me tell you, he's one of the main guys over at Alternative Tentacles. Dominic, what do you do over at Alternative Tentacles generally?
I'm in charge of all marketing promotions. I handle radio, and I'm also the in-house publicist for Jell-O Biafra. So when you write Jell-O, you're writing me first.
Now, what's it like having Jell-O as a boss? Has Jell-O like ever come in while you're at your desk? You're sitting there in a tie, and Jell-O's like, Dominic, we need to increase productivity. What's it like having Jell-O as a boss?
You know, I have to admit that has absolutely never happened. In fact, he only showed up the entire time I've been there. He showed up once, and it was late at night to pick up some stuff. So he describes himself as an absentee thought lord, and that really is true. He sort of like guides it from a distance. I work with Jesse Luscious from The Criminals. He is the general manager, and and there's a couple of us, a lot of interns, and some different people. It's a great place to work, though. A lot of people go like, wow, what's it like working at a record label? And I was like, because I work at two of them now. And it's like, well, I sit in a room with no windows, surrounded by cardboard boxes full of records on a computer most of the day. So it's pretty glamorous. I think I kind of missed out on all the limos and strippers and cocaine that comes with being a record exec. But it's a cool job, but yeah, there's no Jell-O coming in going like, sell more, come on, you know, that doesn't happen.
That was a pretty good impression. I don't have a good Jell-O impression. I know Jack Terrycloth of World Inferno has a great Jell-O impression.
You know, I have to be careful with doing impressions of Jell-O because he has a very distinct way of speaking, and the problem with that is there's a publicist that who's super awesome, this girl Melanie, who works in Canada and handles some of the stuff for us. And when she will go in discussions with him, one time she said she started slipping into doing impersonations while talking to Jell-O. And he said, you do realize you're mocking me right now, right? And she had to like stop, but then he laughed it off. But it was like, I can't do that. I got to be careful. I can't slip into his voice while talking to him.
Dominic, have you ever seen Jell-O's massive record collection? Have you witnessed the glory that is that thing?
I have witnessed parts of it. I've been to his house, and he has definitely, like, rooms filled. I mean, the man has one of the best record collections I've ever seen.
Are they organized?
And he knows everything. Yeah, pretty much. I mean, he'll say no. I think he'd say no, but I think to any other person, they'd say yes. Like, he knows where everything is. He knows what he's, he knows where every, what he has. I mean, he's a walking music library, that's for sure.
And now, how about Jesse Luscious from Blatz, The Criminals? He seems like one of the nicest guys ever. Is that true?
He is one of the nicest guys ever. He really is. He's an absolute great guy. And I've known Jesse since we used to play shows together years ago. And so, I mean, he's never disappointed. He's awesome. Now, yeah, he's a great guy.
Now, in addition to holding it down at Alternative Tentacles, you also hold it down at Kung Fu Records. And actually, you put out probably my favorite reissue of 2014. Dominic, what do you do over at Kung Fu Records?
Pretty much almost exactly the same thing, except for over the internet, and mostly handle digital promotions and marketing for Kung Fu, and do a lot of the graphic design. I do some graphic design and stuff for Alternative Tentacles, but Kung Fu, Kung Fu had kind of a disaster happen where a couple years ago, during a move, they lost the hard drive, the external hard drive that had all of the art files on it, like every single art file. So I have been among doing promotion and marketing and radio and stuff for Kung Fu where I can. Like, I'm also recreating all of the artwork from like literally every album that they've put out, one at a time. So like anything that we've been putting out vinyl wise, all of the reissues, everything else, I've had to recreate everything.
Now, what's it like having Joe Escalante as a boss? You know, I know he's a judge, or at least he's a traffic court judge. So does he walk in and he's like, listen, Dominic, we need to increase productivity and I need a brief by tomorrow morning? Is that what it's like? What's it like having Joe Escalante as a boss?
That's actually closer to Joe than it would be Jello. But like, Joe is definitely very, very hands-on, and he's super, super cool. Like, Joe and I have been friends for a long time, and he and I have like, I was signed to Kung Fu for a long time. I still have albums on Kung Fu. Like, we've been on like all, we've toured together. We've debated being an artist and label. And then now I work at Kung Fu. So it's like, I've known Joe for a long time. He's a great guy. He really is. And, but he's definitely like sarcastic. So he'll slip in. He's really good at the calm, quiet sarcasm that like stings like right underneath. But yeah, he's really fun to work with. Definitely. He's not an absentee thought lord. He's right up in there working on stuff with Kung Fu. Cause Kung Fu was like stopped. We were on hiatus for a long time. And now it's like come back pretty strong, and we're just trying to get everything out there in a new form. And so it's been pretty active. So it's been fun.
And honestly, I mean, if you ask me, Alternative Tentacles is in a golden age. It probably, they've had a couple golden ages, but Alternative Tentacles have been putting out so many awesome records. But Kung Fu has been putting out awesome records too. And we'll get into that later in the podcast. But right now, let's focus on your band, Crash and Attack. Tell the listeners about your band, Crash and Attack. What are you guys up to? What are the hot jams that you guys have for us today?
Well, Crash and Attack is probably one of the most fun bands I've been in like ever. And, they're just a great group of guys. It has, Brandon Paskey, who was in a band that was kind of notable in the Bay Area called My New Life. And our friend Max is the singer, Max Ballesteros. He was in another Bay Area band that's kind of been like legendary to a lot of people called Stigma 13. And then Pave Christensen is on drums, and he's from a band. He was called Inspector Gadget. But, like, a lot of really great Bay Area musicians. We kind of all got together and started having a lot of fun with it. And Crash and Attack has just been a really fun experience. And the song Shake, Shimmy, Drop that I guess we're going to play is off of our first EP, a digital EP called The Blast is Loud.
Let's rock that. It's called Shake, Shimmy, Drop. Off The Blast is Loud by Crash and Attack.
Yeah.
All right, we are back. That was Crash and Attack. And we're going to jump into some stories now, John.
Let's story it up, baby. Let's read some stories.
Let's talk about what people seem to be talking about this week. So first off, Jeff Rosenstock, formerly Bomb Music Industry, has released a new video for his upcoming solo album. The video is for the song Nausea, and the album is titled We Cool. It's going to be out on March 3rd via Side One Dummy. And, Jeff has always seemed to resonate a lot with our audience for various reasons and in various bands that he's been in. John, did you check this out? What do you think?
I did. I had a lot of thoughts about this. First of all, I think the video is extremely well done. I really enjoyed the video, and I like how videos are getting back to like just being about the band, or it doesn't seem like they put a whole lot of money into this video, but it looks great. It gives you an idea of what the band is like, what they do on stage, and I really like the production, I guess, which that's not that interesting of an insight, but I also like how it starts off as kind of like a normal video and then gets really surreal, and honestly it's kind of Flaming Lips-ish if you ask me, particularly the middle section and the end. I thought the song was pretty cool, but I find myself asking a question. This song and a lot of the new Jeff Rosenstock songs are about how he's depressed, how he doesn't think he's going to make it as a musician, how he's not happy with himself. And at what point, I wonder, is that an interesting angle? I mean, and this is all things that he thoroughly investigated on his previous solo stuff with Bomb the Music Industry and even with Arrogant Sons of Bitches. But now he's on Side One Dummy. Side One Dummy is a very, very big independent record label. They're not the biggest, but they're one of the biggest independent record labels, probably like top four. I'm not sure, but I mean, they're really big. So he's on a sizable record label when they've got a sizable push behind it. So the question is this for me. This song is that he's like, oh, I'm never going to make it as a musician, or I'm still depressed. Is that he's winning, if you will, and that he's on a big record label. His career has been a pretty solid incline. So at what point is it okay for him to still say, I'm sad, I'm depressed, this is what my music is about? Or does it become ungainly? Like, for example, The Wall. I love The Wall. It's a fantastic record. But the whole thing is about how Roger Waters feels disconnected from the audience and isn't happy making millions and millions and millions of dollars. Now, The Wall succeeds because it's such a artistic, daring triumph and endeavor. It's very clever. It's very well done. But if it was just Roger Waters and an acoustic guitar saying, I'm depressed even though I make millions and millions of dollars, I would say, I don't feel you, Roger Waters. I think what you're saying is a little grotesque. My question is Jeff Rosenstock valid in expressing that I'm depressed here, or is it big enough that maybe it's time to outgrow it? That's my question.
I don't know. I'm going to have to call shenanigans on that one, buddy, because, like, I don't know if I can, because, like, man, musical success does definitely not equal happiness, and, like, even though it seems like he's on the incline, that he could still be, I mean, he could still be really broke for all we know. Like, I mean, it's not quite, I mean, I don't know, just because of the type of musicians that I've met and the things that I've been through and what I've seen, like I calculated all the records that I ever sold and all of like the bands I was in that were successful. And I came up with a number realizing not one album, but when you added up all the albums, especially like Tsunami Bomb, like I sold almost 100,000 albums. And like,
well, you drive a Rolls Royce, don't you?
Yeah, right. Okay, sure, that happened. No, but I mean, like, at the same time, like at the height of Tsunami Bomb, we named one of our albums "The Ultimate Escape," and its reference was death. Because, like, literally, our guitar player at the time looked at me and was like, "I just want to die. I just want to die." And he was serious. And I looked at him and I was like, "Well, that would be the ultimate escape, I guess, you know, from all this." But it's like, and I've talked to a lot of people who are even bigger than like I ever got and had a hard time. And so,
well, why aren't you having fun at that level of success? I would think you'd be having a blast. What's not?
It's exhausting. It's exhausting. One, I mean, like if you're touring all the time and you're going like everybody around you, especially if you get to a point where like you're even on an independent label, which is not a major, but like Side One Dummy and you're selling records and you're on tour all the time, like everybody's keeping you on the road and pushing, like, because they want, you know, if you stop, nothing, you know, everything slows down. So you keep going and you feel like you need to keep going. And you're like, you know, maybe you're making money, maybe you're not, like, maybe you're just getting by, maybe you're falling behind in your own personal bills. But then you're like, you're on the road all the time, like you come home and like everything's changed, but you're still the same. And like, you know, a building, a field that was empty in your town is now a huge building. And then, like, you know, people have broken up and moved on. And then some other people have gotten in relationships. And you're like, I was just gone playing shows. Now I'm back. Like, you feel really isolated. So if you're sort of a person that struggles with kind of depression and like, God help you if you have any sort of mental issues that you have going in, like, I know it's hard to look outside and go like, dude, everybody's cheering you on. You have so many people, your records are everywhere. What are you complaining about? But it's like, it's still hard. It's still life. You know, it's like, you still struggle with it. I mean, and Roger Daltrey, the Pink Floyd, that guy was insane. Like, I mean, he had serious problems. So it's like, it's definitely just different. It doesn't answer all the problems. So I would say, like, yeah, man, he could still be really depressed and be seemingly successful.
Hmm.
You know, I've held some people, I've held the hand of some really big time musicians that were really upset and bummed out that I would even have to go like, seriously, man, like, even I'm starting to question, like, why are you doing this? And they're making money and it's a band, like a huge band, you know, it's like some of them have a real hard time. I don't know. Sorry for lecturing.
No. I think that is great and wonderful insight, Dominic. And that's exactly why we brought you onto the podcast. Adam, how do you respond to that?
Well, no, I want to approach this on the other angle. So if you want to say approach this from the angle of a listener, what I think maybe the danger is sometimes a band can come back to that well so many times, at least in such without introducing a lot of variety into it, that it starts to either ring hollow or it starts to get tiresome. And this is to say nothing of how, you know, how real the feelings might be on the part of the artist. But like I'm thinking back to like my all time most hated Against Me record, which everyone loves for some reason. But like I can never sit through Searching for a Form of Clarity just because I find the whole thing sort of just like complaining about being in Against Me. And while that's all very relevant to the people in Against Me, that doesn't really have that much relevance in my life. And it always struck me as just something that I couldn't click with. Or you look at like bands that have kind of come back to that same initial well of complaining, let's say, that they've really, really done well in the past over and over again. And at what point does it ring hollow? Like you look at, say, like Less Than Jake, and how much can that band sing about, like, you know, wanting to get out of your boring hometown? Like there's, you know, 15 songs that they've written about that topic in one way or the other. And at the 16th song, you're like, man, I sympathize the first 15 times, but just leave. Shit.
you gotta move, man. You gotta move.
It's starting to sound like maybe you're the problem here. So,
I was gonna say, I have to admit, there was a particular musician that I toured with who's from a very big band and does very well for himself, like far better than many others. And he was like complaining on the tour, going, I don't know, man. I just can't stand this. I'm just so fucking sick of it. And I was like, really? Because I know a dude that plays bass and he is working in a metal yard, a scrap yard, hauling metal. And if you want, I could call him. He'll fly right out here and you could go work in the metal scrap yard if you want, hauling like steel all day. And he can play your parts and probably doesn't even need to learn them. I think he already knows them. And he gave me a look of death and didn't speak to me for the next day on the tour. Like, that was it. Like, he just would not speak to me again for like I was like kicked out of the circle for like a day for being a sarcastic jerk.
Was it Lemmy of Motorhead? It was Lemmy, wasn't it?
No, it was not Lemmy of Motorhead. It was
well, you don't have to say who it is. I was with
a Bat Bike.
Oh,
no, but he's a great guy, but he was super bummed. And I was like, dude, you of all people. But like that also, I mean, you know, he was bummed about stuff too. I mean, he was tired and whatever.
Yeah, I sort of feel that like in Jeff Rosenstock's case, being bummed out is kind of his thing. Like, I don't know how I'd in sort of like a manic way, like he's either like super excited and really, really, really happy or he's really bummed out. And I don't know how to interact with a Jeff Rosenstock that isn't living at one of those two extremes.
See, if this was a live show and you guys were taking calls, he would literally call up and be like, dude, why are you hating on my thing?
That's well, my no, thing. I love that thing. I'm just, those are the modes. Like, if Jeff Rosenstock was to record like a completely middle of the road record where most of the songs are about, I don't know, trees, I don't know how I'd be able to handle that. That's not the Jeff I know.
The key. Oh, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, I've heard compelling arguments that Alkaline Trio only writes amazing albums when Matt Skiba is single and not with anyone. And then when he's with somebody, they're not as, those are not the strongest albums. But then when he breaks up and he has a hard time, those are the great albums. So I've heard a compelling argument for that. Sometimes people got to be bummed to write.
That's true. The kids are really, really responding to this record, it seems like. Last question about this topic. Is this going to be like a huge record? Like, is Jeff Rosenstock going to break through to the mainstream, or at least the upper echelons of like the indie world? Like, will this be the record that like sets Jeff Rosenstock permanently as a rock and roller that people know?
Just silence. Like,
this is everyone. Well, all right. Like, I feel that we've dealt this before with this before, and I think that when we did, we came up with this incredibly tortured analogy where we actually made up a bunch of personas of various music listeners. So,
oh, that's right, Tommy Leatherbag and Jimmy Microchip. I forgot about those guys.
So I won't go back to that well, but I'm going to say probably not. But it's not really Jeff's fault.
Well, let's talk about somebody that's even more relevant to the kids. Geezer Butler of Black Sabbath. He just got arrested for bar fighting, and I think it's the greatest thing ever. On January 27, Geezer Butler of Black Sabbath was in the Corkscrew Saloon in Death Valley National Park. And he was there, and he got in an argument with some guy, and he got into a fist fight with some other person. They didn't say who he got in a fist fight with. And Geezer Butler was arrested for misdemeanor assault and put in the drunk tank. So I don't know if there's a whole lot we can take away from this, except for I think Geezer Butler is still awesome. And the question, I guess, is it going back to our previous question, reiterating that, is it awesome or is it ungainly for Geezer Butler to be fist fighting at 65 in Death Valley?
It's awesome. It's awesome. How is that not awesome? He's 65 years old and he kicks somebody's ass. That's amazing. That's amazing. Geezer Butler's amazing. That just, to me, that means he's amazing. I mean, yeah, it's like, what do you expect him to do? He's like, I sit at home and I knit sweaters when I'm not touring with Black Sabbath. I'm like, no, he's going to kick your ass if you talk shit. That's amazing.
Do you think the guy knew that he was getting his ass kicked by a member of Black Sabbath?
Oh, man, I don't know. Maybe he didn't even have a chance.
Dominic, would you take a beating so you could say that you got beat up by a member of Black Sabbath? Would you punch back? Like, let's say you're at a bar and you're sitting there with your
girl in Death Valley.
In Death Valley, and you're married, right, Dominic?
It happened. Yeah.
Okay. And this guy comes up to you and your wife, and he's being like really, really rude to your wife or whatever, right? And he's like, I'm gonna beat you up. Would you punch him? Would you take a beating? Would you try to take him out if you knew it was Geezer Butler? What would you do?
I'm going to be real for you right now, okay? I'm going to tell you that if it involved my wife, I don't care who it is, I'm going to knock him out. But if it's not involving my wife, out of respect for Black Sabbath, I'll let him take some shots. Like, so, I was just like, okay.
So, like, what if he comes up and he says, the kind of music that you make is shitty? Like, you take a punch from Geezer Butler for that, just for the story?
I think I would for the story, yeah. That's not every story. Musician, but for Geezer Butler, I would. Like, I mean, if it was somebody else, but, like, you know, Black Sabbath, it's like, oh, man, maybe I need it. Geezer Butler hates my music. Maybe I need to get punched for this.
See, I would take a punch from Geezer Butler, but if it was Ozzy, I'd like try to beat him up as much as I can, just because, like, just for Tony Iommi's behalf. I'm still mad at Tony Iommi for getting sued by Ozzy and settling. I'm so mad at that Tony Iommi settled. I'm so mad.
I honestly think that if Ozzy swung at you, he'd probably shatter. Man, I don't know if that guy should be like doing anything that would cause him harm. He just seems so fragile to me, and that was years ago. He seemed fragile. I can't even imagine him now. It's not even funny. It's like, yeah, he's terrible. But Geezer Butler, he'll kick your ass. Like, let's get back to that. There's no question. But I don't know, Adam. What do you think? I think it's awesome.
I don't know what I can add to this. I mean, I agree with everything here. So.
Adam, you have to fight one of the four members of Black Sabbath. Who would you fight and why?
I mean, I would want to say that I'd fight Ozzy only because, like, I feel that it would be easy, but I don't know if that just means that, like, yeah, I'd rather fight, like, a really old person because, it would be less work.
I think he's the youngest. He's just in the worst amount of shape.
Well, you're right. But I mean, that's not a very it's not a very noble challenge that I'm making
this
here.
This is a Fight Club conversation.
Right. Like I'll take the one that I can just really easily do. So I'll leave that there, and we're going to move on, I guess. So Sean Bonnet of Andrew Jackson Jihad has released a digital covers EP via quote-unquote records. The story behind this thing is that in May of 2014, the Phoenix nonprofit Skate After School launched a fundraising campaign to raise money for a full-time program coordinator. And one of the incentives in the fundraising campaign was donating to a recording from Sean Bonnet. So this thing is now released. There are 6 covers on here of songs by the Misfits, Guided by Voices, Back Modern English, Slayer, and David Bowie. There's a couple guests that are participating in this. You've got Ian Graham of Cheap Girls, who does some vocals on the I Melt With You cover, and John Olson of Wolf Eyes makes some noise on the South of Heaven cover. So, you can find this whole thing at quote unquote. And as with most quote unquote things, it's a donation based, Creative Commons kind of release thing. So. Any thoughts, John? You're a Andrew Jackson convert, eh?
I am a convert. I told the story before, so I'll say it briefly. I used to hate this band. And in fact, I once went and saw Jeff. It was Andrew Jackson Jihad, Jeff Rosenstock, Hard Girls, and who was the fourth band? I forgot who the fourth. I don't think it was Narboot. It wasn't Narboot. It was somebody else. Oh, it was Dog Party. Dog Party rules. Dominic, you know Dog Party?
Yeah, I love that band.
Dog awesome. Party rules. Anyway, so I was so angry that I'm like I'm going to a punk show. I go there. Sean Bonnet gets up, and this is right before the release of Christmas Island. And it's just some guy like playing an acoustic guitar. I was literally angry. I'm like, why am I here? How dare this guy take my time under the facade of punk and get up here and like just be like so gentle and soft? I was angry. But then I heard Christmas Island, and I had to take it all back. Christmas Island, I don't want to say it's a masterpiece, but it's a very clever, extremely dark, well-done record. Here's why I bring all this up. If I had heard this EP 2 years ago, I'd be like, how dare you take the power away from Slayer? Slayer is not a band that's meant to be played acoustically. It's insulting to Slayer to take their power from them and neuter them. The music, like, it's insulting to the song. But now, the educated John of 2015, the more cultured John of 2015, I actually think he did an interesting job rearranging these tunes and did show that Slayer is just as threatening, well, actually not just as threatening, almost as threatening without the electricity as they are with the electricity. But further, I think he did an awesome job of selecting these songs. He didn't just do all punk, but he didn't just do like Bruce Springsteen, which I'm so sick of, you know what I mean, or Woody Guthrie. He did Modern English, which is like an 80s group, which actually might be pretty good. He did Slayer, he did Bowie. I gotta say, for a covers EP of this magnitude, which is really a rather low stakes affair, I think this is well done, and I give it 2 thumbs up.
Yeah. Right. I thought it was awesome. It was really good. I noticed that he covered the Misfits, which seems to be the go-to cover for any underground band. But it's all sounded really good. I mean, it's cool. It's cool for a cause. That's awesome. John, you would be a really interesting person to go to shows with, I think, because of the righteous indignation that you feel on so many things. I would really want to I want to go to a show with you and let you talk to me about how you feel about it. Like, good or bad.
But when John gets into fights with people, then you could just go to the bar and get a drink and then come back when John's done.
John's fighting, he's the butler. This is the best show I've ever been to.
I think Dominic is getting the opinion I'm a hater. I'm really not a hater, honestly.
No.
I'm a pretty easygoing guy.
You're passionate.
Dominic, here's my central statement. Well, actually, I've got 2 central statements with punk rock. Here's my second of 2 central statements. I really don't – like, if people want to make Bruce Springsteen kind of music, that doesn't bother me at all. That's fine with me. But my problem is when this Bruce Springsteen kind of music – encroaches upon the kind of music that I like and says the kind of music that I like, you can't make that. It's too energetic. It's too dangerous. That's when I get angry, because I'm not bothering you. Let me do what I want to do, but you're saying I can't do what I want to do. And so 3 years ago, I wouldn't even care about, like, you know, when Joyce Manor said no moshing at shows. I wouldn't care. But now there's shows that I want to go to with moshing, and people are like, you shouldn't mosh. It's encroaching upon how I want to express myself, and that's why I've been more on the attack in the past 8 months or so than I had been previously.
I see where you're coming from. I feel you, and I agree. And I will admit that it has seemed like that a number of underground musicians suddenly discovered their father's copy of Bruce Springsteen. So I will back you up on that one too.
Well, speaking of a guy that is not down with Bruce Springsteen, let me tell you, people, Dominic helped put out my favorite reissue of 2014. He helped put out the audio version of the Circle Jerks' The Show Must Go Off. Dominic, why don't you tell the folks a little bit about this fantastic album, about the reissue, and what you're going to play?
This is awesome, because like back in the back about 10 years ago or so, Kung Fu Records was doing a DVD series of live concert videos, which all are really awesome, and they have a number of bands that are really great on the series. And so it's just sort of sitting there, and like music DVDs don't really sell anymore. It's not really the thing. I started making suggestions that we should like take that material and turn it into vinyl.
Wait, that was your idea?
Yeah. Initially it was sort of an idea of everyone, but like my idea was like, dude, we should totally convince Alkaline Trio to let us put out their live record. But then, they apparently aren't super stoked on their particular live performance, even though I really love it. And then Joe was the one that was like, no, we need to go with Circle Jerks. And I was like, holy shit, I forgot about Circle Jerks. That's an amazing one. So they said yes, and we got to do it. And it was really exciting. It's a huge, like, it's a huge, like, double LP. And I had to take the only artwork that we had was the physical DVD of The Show Must Go Off. And I had to turn it into a giant gatefold and make it look like the artwork was always meant to be the giant gatefold LP. It was particularly challenging, but yeah, I was stoked. It's such a great record. I mean, I know not everyone's into live records, but it was so great. It's so great. And I had to pick Wild in the Streets, like, because I love that song. So
this live record is a jam. And before I play, Dominic, honestly, I'd rather have a live album than a live DVD, because you like watch a DVD like once or twice, but live albums you spin over and over. Do you agree? Do you disagree? And Adam, how about you? What do you think?
Well,
go ahead.
Yeah, all right. So I would be inclined to say, like, yeah, I'd much rather a live album, because I'll listen to something way more than I will watch it. But every time I put in one of the live DVDs that I have in this giant dust covered pile of live DVDs that I own, I always say to myself, like, man, I should just put these things on. These things are great. And then I never do. And then I complain that they're useless. So I think that to people who are, I don't know, have a strategically placed television somewhere near them, that you could totally loop one of these like live DVDs during the day and it would be cool. But that's not me. So I'll go for the audio.
For me, I have some really great ones, you know, that are really awesome and I love. I there's been some shows that have really been like amazing. Like I have a Op Ivy DVD from a boot, like a VHS camera recorded at Gilman, and it's like, oh my god, that show's awesome. But like, honestly, yeah, I mean, I like live concert albums. Some people don't, though. I've actually run into a couple of people lately that have told me like, I don't like live albums. I was like, what, really? But yeah, I love it, and I love this one. This one's great. Like, I think anybody who loves Circle Jerks and anyone who just loves music, like punk rock and period, like, should get this record.
This record rocks. This is live at the House of Blues, The Show Must Go Off, Circle Jerks, out on Kung Fu Records, double LP with download, Wild in the Streets.
Still needed to run a chemical.
Okay, and we're back. So we're going to talk about a few more stories that happened this past week and a few things that had come out that people are really digging. And one of those is the debut LP, the self-titled debut LP from War on Women, the record of the same name. It's due out on February 10th, 2015, so it'll probably be out by the time anyone hears this podcast. But the whole thing is streaming right now via Bridge 9, and a lot of people seem to be into this. And John, you struggled with War on Women.
I struggled with War, and we talked about this last week. I struggled with War on Women because I listened to it, and I'm like, this music has been done before. Between 1988 and 1992, a million bands did this. But that's on me. That's not on them. This record is a great record. And honestly, if you compare it to the Power, Violence, and the Crust, and, you know, just the hardcore from 88 to 92, this is actually a little bit better. It's a little bit more tactical, a little bit more clever, a little bit snappier, a little bit more accessible. It's a great record. I recommend it. If you're not familiar with this kind of hardcore, this is definitely a good record to check out. I dig it, man.
The lyrics are awesome. Her lyrics are great. Like, I had no idea. I'm going to reveal how uncool I am. And I had no idea who War on Women were until you guys posted it. But they're great. This is her lyrics were really impressive. I was really blown away. She's got a great voice, and they're really pissed off, clearly angry, very angry. And it was fun. It's fun. It's an awesome record.
And, you know, I'm going to add, the kids need a band like this. Like, there's a lot of bands that deal with right now that deal with, you know, interior issue. You know, it's like, I feel bad or you know, I can't get motivated or and that's fine. And introspective music is great. I love introspective music. But we do need a band to come along and talk about world issues or not, exterior stuff, not interior stuff. And this is just the band to do it.
Well, I mean, it's funny. You see this band, they broke out, it did not take very long for them to start touring with Propagandhi and Reviver, right? Like there's surprisingly for more popular punk rock, there are very little bands that seem to be coming out with like an overtly political message that haven't been around for a long time that are resonating with people. And this is like one of a handful. So, you know, you get these guys, you get Reviver, and then the two of them go and they tour with Propagandhi because I guess that's all you got left.
That doesn't surprise me at all. Like, honestly, I can totally see that matchup working out really well. I could see Propagandhi hearing this and going like, you guys are awesome. You're coming with us. Like, I get that. Like, they have a message, but it's not overwhelming the music. It's like, I will admit though, when I listened to it, I was like, wow, I have rarely heard a band whose album matches their band name more than this band. Like, they are singing about literally War on Women. Like, they are making references. She makes a lot of reference to that, and it's, I don't know. I was really into it. I never heard of them. I don't know anything about them other than what I saw in Punk News, but I'm definitely checking them out.
You know, Dominic, I'm glad you mentioned that, because this band has been accused of being too direct, and one guy was being funny. He's like, is this a band that makes fun of hardcore? Like, even though they are hardcore, like that band International Spears of Hardcore or Judd. I do agree this band is very direct, but you know what? Maybe now's the time for a band to be this direct. I think we need a band to really say, you know, here's what we believe. Here's what's right with America. Here's what's wrong with America. Get hip to it, people. So I appreciate this band's, I don't say bluntness.
I don't think get hip to it, people, is quite this.
You bring those back. You bring those sayings back, John. You don't listen to Adam. You bring it back. You say don't hip.
So
you
listen.
Don't let it. You go on.
So listen, Sly and the Family Stone is something people need to be listening to. No. I think we need a direct, perhaps oversimplified message, but, you know, an oversimplified message that gets people to pay attention and to think about stuff is better than a super complex message that no one pays attention to. That's my point. That's my position,
Robert. I love the fact that there's a kid or an adult on Punk News sitting there going, you know what? This band is way too direct for me. I don't. What is this? This just is too much. too much of a message that's being directly given. It's like, really? That's something you're going to complain about? Like, it's an incredible band. This band kicks ass.
Well, speaking of a band that I guess encourages, that isn't that direct, and encourages, you know, what is this band really saying, really encourages dissection, The Offspring have released a new single. The single is called Coming For You, and it looks like it's going to be an upcoming album, but nobody knows for sure. Did you guys dig this new Offspring single? Is Offspring still relevant? I mean, they're a pretty popular band, to tell you the truth. Like, they still sell a lot of records, or at least they sell out big stadiums. Did you guys dig this?
No. Jesus Christ. Sorry, I cut you off here, but I'm so angry.
You go right ahead. I will sit here and listen. Go right ahead.
This is the most calculated, like, arena song that I have ever heard. Like, if there was ever something that was written to be played for 45 seconds, you know, at a hockey game when they go to commercial and the people are out scraping the ice, or whatever non-hockey example the rest of you may have for that kind of thing, this is that song. This is, you know, it is incredibly vapid and incredibly, I don't know, sportsy in sort of like the worst way. And it's really long, which is just infuriating. I'm okay for something being sort of dumb and straightforward, but this is kind of dumb and straightforward for like almost 4 minutes, and that's like twice as long as you really need to be to get across the point of what this thing is. Now, that said, I didn't get that far. So if at minute like 250 in this song something really crazy happens, I'm sorry, but I'm pretty sure it doesn't. So that's where I'm going with this. I mean, you can like The Offspring and everything, but oof.
I still haven't forgiven The Offspring for Why Don't You Get a Job, ripping off The Beatles just to have a hit. And I felt like Mugatu saying that did anybody else notice, and being surrounded by people who didn't understand what I was talking about. So I've really never forgiven them for that, because which was either a brilliant move or it was brilliant and terrible. This, I think I liked Offspring back when they were a punk band that would come up and play Gilman. And I remember those days before everybody gave a shit about them. And I don't mean to pull in like I'm not pulling the old man card that's all bitter. But like, I remember the band that I saw then. I don't recognize this band from that band. Like, it's hard for me to even understand that they're the same band anymore. But that said, like, you know, it's a great song. If you like Offspring, then you're about to be happy. But but I have to say, it does sound pretty calculated. I have to agree. And I think they calculate all of their songs. I think you really think about what they're going to be for, rather than like just writing the song. You know,
I don't think anyone's going to judge you at this point for having some nostalgia about the Offspring back in the day, because they've been on this. This
Aerosmith
track, like, yeah, for a long time. But the problem is, and what's always kind of rang the most hollow for me about the Offspring has been that early stuff, like the first two records on Epitaph, or was the one on Epitaph the one on Nitro? I don't know. But anyways, those first two records, if you were to see them live, they could actually do those songs, and if they played them live, they'd kind of sound like they should have. But and so if I'm thinking back to, and it is crazy that this is actually like 15 years ago, but Woodstock 99. Remember Woodstock 99? So wow. The Offspring played Woodstock 99, and they were playing, and I remember seeing the footage of them playing that, and Dexter couldn't hit the notes in his own songs. Like, and this was just on the verge of I think Americana might have been out by then, maybe not, but there where the Offspring had a lot of these like radio friendly songs they had gone and, you know, and put together, and they were clearly playing in that ballpark and weren't, you know, so much doing the punk rock thing anymore. And I guess like that's fine if you can do it, but all that stuff was just like studio. Like, he could not, you know, he could not hit the notes in his own hits. And it was just kind of sad. And I got to imagine that since everything I've heard from them since then has kind of been on the same track, that's probably still the case. And I don't know. It doesn't really strike me as all that genuine anymore.
I have debates with Jesse at AT because he's, you know, he's old school Gilman guy, and he's still good friends with them, and they're all nice people. Like I got to see him recently when they played with the Vandals on the tour, and the last run over the summer, and you know, like they're the Offspring, man. This is the Offspring. There's no surprises. It's the Offspring. Yay. You know, they're them. You're not going to be blown. I mean, if you love them, you're going to still love them. If you hate them, this won't convince you, I don't think.
I'd say part of it begs the question is, like, who's the Offspring's audience these days? Because, like, the kids aren't into rock and roll in the first place, so it's not the kids anymore. But, like, it could have been the kids back when, like, Americana came out and everyone was, you know, laughing along with their funny music videos and all that stuff, right?
I don't know, man. No. It's not us. They headline.
Because we're old and jaded, so I don't know who's their people.
Wait a minute. They headlined over Bad Religion and the Vandals on that tour that just happened over the summer. They headlined, and I watched them, like, own the crowd. Like, they went on last. They got the nighttime. They had the lights going. They had everybody going crazy. They got a lot of hits, man. They have a lot of hits. So they're all the kids that came out to that show was loving them. What was it, Summer National? Was that what it was called? What was it called? Anyway, it was. Do you guys remember what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
And it was like that was a big deal. And they headlined. They kept the crowd. It wasn't like everybody left. You know, but
is this a California thing now?
It might be. I saw Offspring.
Hey, bro, don't hey, man. Hey, dude, come on.
Hey, bro.
California. Hey, bro.
I saw Offspring headline some festival. Dominic, you know the festival they have, like, once a summer, or maybe not even anymore, down
Warped
at the – no, not the Warped Tour. Yeah.
Just kidding.
It's like the radio station thing they have down at the Mountain View Amphitheater, whatever that radio show – the radio festival is. Offspring headlined, and I went with some people, and I'm not even a huge Offspring fan, but it was fun, you know. It wasn't great, but it was fun, and I think that's why Offspring continues to do what they do, is they're an act that is fun for a wide audience of people. You know, it's not going to be a life changing, like, oh my god, I can't. It's not going to be like, oh, I saw Keith Morris and Flag, but it's like, oh yeah, Offspring, they were fun, you know. So
they're like a Fisher Price punk band at this point, yeah, kind of like how Blink-182 was. It's like a good My First punk band for a lot of people, and a lot of people still love them. So, yeah. But we clearly aren't that excited.
Oh, we'll get letters. If anyone wants to write us letters about the Offspring, it's podcast@punknews.org. And you can send us letters there. Just don't send us letters about the transplants anymore, please. So we're going to move on here. recently in Philadelphia, Rachel Rubino of Bridge and Tunnel, Dan Yemen of Painted Black and Kid Dynamite and Lifetime and Armalite, which is really the most important of those four bands, Andy Nelson of Ceremony, Painted Black and Dark Blue, Chris Wilson, who plays with Ted Leo, debuted their new band. The band played about six songs that were rooted in hardcore with some Fugazi and post-punk influences. Rubino was on vocals, Yemen was on guitar, Nelson on bass, and then Wilson on drums. And the band does not yet have a name. But they have already recorded material and plan to release it. So I don't know, have fun Googling this because it's going to be tough. But, yeah, so this band that has a lot of people that people love in it exists. That's all we can tell you.
yeah, I saw this band live, and I think people are hoping it's going to be Painted Black with Rachel Rubino on vocals. It's not quite that. It's hardcore. The music is a little bit longer, a little bit more complex. I would say if you want to imagine what this band sounds like, it's halfway between Painted Black and Fugazi with Rachel Rubino doing her hardcore vocals. And it rocks, man. This band is good. I saw them. I'm excited for this. I think this is going to be a really good band to check out in 2015. And I'm just going to do a short story here. Is for the past 3 years or so, I've had an online Twitter feud with Dan Yemen, because he put how much he hated dancehall music on his Twitter. And so he and I got into a big fight about why I think dancehall is great and he doesn't like. like dance hall, and I wasn't sure if it was serious. Like, did we actually hate each other, or were we just joking around? Because honestly, it's kind of tough to tell with uber political punks. I like Dan Yemen, but he is an uber political punk. You know what I mean? So I never can tell if they're joking around or if they're being serious. So I spoke to Dan Yemen at this show, and we're cool. Just FYI. So I really didn't know. For 3 years, I really didn't know if Dan Yemen hated me or he respected me, but disagreed about dance hall with me.
So you guys got together and bonded over your mutual love for Buju Banton, and that made it all better.
No, he hates Adam. This is what it comes down. Dan Yemen's problem is that he thinks Buju Banton represents all dance hall, and that's the crux of this argument. I'm like, Dan, there are lots of non-homophobic dance hall people. If you say all dance hall is homophobic, then you have to say all punk rock is homophobic because there are homophobic people in punk rock. Buju Banton does not represent all of punk rock, but also all of dance hall. And that's why we had a 3-year-long fight, Adam. And I think you just reignited it.
Oh, man. So you were at this show, right?
Yeah, I was. It was awesome.
How was Armalite?
Honestly, I don't know a whole lot about Armalite. It was cool. They did two covers. The first cover was a Code of Honor cover. None of the kids knew that band, and so no one knew what the cover was except for me. And they also did a Magnetic Fields cover, which was cool. But they were cool. I didn't realize how jokey Armalite. Like, the music was good, but they were telling. Actually, there was a really really funny joke when they were taking a long time to set up. So a woman who's in a lot of bands in Philadelphia, I don't know who she is, but I see her around a lot. She's like, have you guys done this before? Like, she was like being funny because they're taking so long to set up. And then the lead singer of Armalite, who I thought was Adam and his package, but isn't. I don't know who's the lead singer of Armalite. It's some other guy. He says, listen, you can microwave a burrito in 30 seconds, but a fine cuisine takes a lot more setup. And I thought that was like one of the funniest, quickest wit things I'd ever heard.
Well played.
Let me see who's the lead singer of Armalite. I thought it was...
Was it not Adam? I could have swore it was Adam.
Well, he's in the band, but...
Pretty sure it's Adam.
No, well, there's another guy that sings too, though.
Oh, well, you can figure that out. I remember seeing them at Fest a few years ago, and the entire time they were on stage, Dan played with, like, the biggest shit-eating grin on his face, and just, like, eyes as big as they could be, huge toothy smile for, like, the entire set. It was the weirdest thing.
McKee and Adam share vocals. Mike McKee is the other guy.
Okay, yeah, there you go.
I think it's awesome when people form, like, people from bands form, like, new groups and super groups. Like, I'm super into that. So I'm a geek for stuff like this. So I don't have much else to say other than I think it's cool that it exists, and I can't wait to hear it.
I just want Armalite to record more.
I wouldn't expect
that humongous 7-inch they had out a few years ago. I love that thing. I could listen to that thing over and over again.
You never know with these guys, because all of a sudden Armalite will just drop something out of the blue. But I wouldn't expect it. It definitely seemed like this was a very rare occurrence for them, and they were pointing out that this is a rare occurrence for them. Could be wrong, though.
You're probably right. So I guess we're going to end off here, John, with a little bit of John stories. This is a band that you've been talking about for a long time. So Bad Canoes have released a video for the song Darcy's Boots. The video is directed by Kate Sweeney. The video was previously shown during the I don't even know what you call it, during the
MTV
weird
12.
But I'm trying to describe MTV 12 for people.
Listen, Adam, why don't you – the kids well, that's actually not true. Most of the kids get MTV 12. A few commenters do not understand MTV 12. I love MTV 12. Can you explain to them what MTV 12 is and why they're having such a hard time understanding it?
You can explain it to me.
All right. So this has happened 3 times in the history of the world. So we have this video feature that we've run on Punk News that's around 30, 40 minutes long, where the folks from Bad Canoes will basically take on the role of kind of awkward parody of a 90s MTV VJ, and will introduce like a whole bunch of underground punk rock bands that they play, all the while being super weird about it in sort of a charming way. I don't know. How else would you describe it, John?
I will explain to MTV 12 for people who are like, what is this shit? Let me tell you what MTV 12 is. MTV 12 is a collection of music videos by bands that are semi-well known and not known at all. Not punctured. What's the word? What do you call that? Punctuation. That's punctuated by funny little whimsical sketches that are just weird for the sake of weirdness and funny for the sake of weirdness and gives you something different than the mind-numbing trash that TV feeds you 23 hours during the day when you're not watching MTV 12. It's just fun. It's whimsy. It's weird, which is the exact point of punk rock. And that's why MTV 12 is great. The music is great. People are like, what's this hipster bullshit? It's not. They're not hip. Hipster doesn't even mean anything anymore. Like, that word ceased meaning something like 3 years ago. But these bands are not hipster bands. I mean, these bands are bands that are playing some pretty punk rock places. And I know because Johnny G's a pretty punk rock dude. And I go to punk rock places and I see these bands there. These bands are punk rock. Just because they don't sound like The Offspring or Mass Intruder doesn't mean they're not punk rock. I'm just saying, I'm getting very angry here, and I don't know why. MTV 12 is awesome. I love Bad Canoes, although honestly, I'm going to pull back on talking about them because I feel I'm overhyping them, and I think that can hurt a band. Dominic, can overhyping a band hurt a band? I feel I've done this in the past with a couple of bands. I've gotten so excited about some bands, I've overhyped them, and people just don't even want to hear about them anymore. Can a band suffer from overhyping?
Oh, totally. Yeah, but I mean, like,
great.
Yeah. Oh, easily. Like, because, like, I don't know. I always feel like music is kind of a personal, in some ways, a personal reaction. So you can get so blown away and excited by a band, and then rave about it and say, "Oh, you got to check this out! You got to check this out! This is amazing! This is amazing!" And then you play to your friend, and it just falls flat. And they're just like, "Yeah, okay, they're okay, they're all right." I don't know. Like, I think there's something in a lot of people, especially people who obsess about music, like us and everybody that goes to Punk News is, and everybody that plays in a band. Those of us that obsess about music, I think there's something about it that, like, resists the excitement sometimes. You know, sometimes we get bit by the bug, and then other times we purposefully hate it. So, yeah, I think you can overhype a band to a degree, but I don't know. I mean, if a band's a great band, they're a great band. They're going to win over everybody anyway, no matter what you say. I mean, unless Bad Canoes calls you up, John, and says, "Hey, man, you gotta like ease it back, man. It's getting a little crazy." I think you're good.
Well, I'm going to be in California for work for a month next week, and I'm kind of glad because I go to pretty much all of their Philadelphia shows, and I don't want them to think I'm creepy, you know. So I'm going to their show on Friday, and that's the last time I'm going to be there for a little while.
Are you standing in the back staring? Are you just like staring, or are you like
they know who I am? You know what I mean? Which kind of makes it worse. You know what I mean? They're like, "Oh, John's here." You know what I mean? So I feel like I love this. I mean, I'm not overstating. I'm saying this band has blown my mind. This band is amazing. This will probably be my favorite release of 2015. They're putting out a 7-inch, but I don't want to overhype them. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I think that being able to hype weird bands that only you like is sort of, that's the payment of you know, contributing to Punk News, is that you get to do that shit, and then, you know, everyone hates you.
So, and everyone has to listen.
Hey, Dominic, did you like this band? I'm just curious.
I did.
Yeah. Oh, you did?
Yeah, they're definitely, they were not what I expected. This is another thing that was the first time I've encountered Bad Canoes, is this very video. And I thought they were kind of like, "Oh, this is kind of crazy. This kind of takes me back a little bit to kind of a different kind." Like, to me, I immediately thought of like some of the wacky stuff of Ween and Dead Milkmen, but I've only heard one song. And so I got kind of excited, like, "Oh, is that something that's happening here? I want to check this out, like, see what else they have." So they interested me enough to like look into what crazy, wacky stuff they're doing, because it does seem to be offbeat. From what everybody else is, you know what I mean? Like you said, it's not like what everyone's going to expect, but it's definitely different, and it's kind of awesome that it is.
Well, fair enough. Let's wrap up the podcast, unless Adam, did you have any closing quotes about Bad Canoes?
No, I'm cool. I'm good, John. I like that you're hyping this band. I like that we're hyping things that are not, you know, bands that sound like the Lawrence Arms. Yeah. And I have no problem with the Lawrence Arms, but there's a lot of those.
Well, actually, I'm going to do a quick shout out for the hot bands that I think you should check out in 2015, very briefly. Bad Canoes, Pushing It to the Limit, The Rentiers, Crazy in the Brains, The Disconnects, Crash and Attack. Check out these bands in 2015. Adam, what band should we check out 2015? Just quickly.
Oh, I got to do this off the top of my head.
Well, you think, Dominic, what band should we check out in 2015?
I would check out Mischief Brew is going to put out something on.
Are you a fellow Mischief Brew fan? I'm a Mischief Brew maniac.
I am definitely, and they're putting an album out on Alternative Tentacles, and I'm so excited about it. It's awesome.
Dominic,
and
that's breaking news, you know.
I guess I did just break some news because we haven't even announced it on the the website. We haven't announced it.
Super exciting. That is, man, I'll tell you, I got to say, I'm going to stop this for a second. I always feel so great about myself when I learn that Jell-O is into a band that I'm into because I feel it validates my taste. Like when Alternative Tentacles put out, I mean, I've been hyping World Inferno for 8 or 9 years now. And then, you know, they put out their last album, Alternative Tentacles. I'm like, yeah, man, I know what I'm talking about. If Jell-O's into this band, then I know what I'm talking about. Mischief Brew.
Yeah, Jell-O wanted them for a while, wanted World Inferno for forever, but it just finally worked out, and they're amazing, and that record's amazing. But yeah, Mischief Brew on AT's got something. The Vandals are going to be putting out a new song on the Soundwave soundtrack this year, and it's called I'm an Individual, and they have been recording. They are putting something together. I don't know when the Vandals are going to release something new, but they do exist. They have stuff going on that's going to happen, and I'm kind of excited about what they're going to do because it's been a long time. I'm getting back together with some of my Tsunami Bomb members, and we're doing a new band, so that's kind of exciting. Yeah, it's a bunch of the original songwriters for Tsunami Bomb, all the original members kind of getting together. Not everybody. Not the singer. She doesn't want to do it, but otherwise it would be Tsunami Bomb. But it's the rest of a lot of us are getting together and doing something new.
You should pull it off and like call yourself something that is like Tsunami Bomb, like Off and Black Flag. So it should be like, I don't know, like Typhoon Explosion. You know what I mean?
You're not the first person who's brought that up, man. I don't know. I'm trying to decide like how funny I want to be with it. That does kind of seem funny because it is pretty much the original drummer, guitarist, myself, the bassist, and the keyboard player. So it's just about everybody in the original lineup.
So much
we could
news.
Do something like that. And then, and another friend of mine, another Brandon from Crash Attack is going to help out with it. That's going to be fun. Crash Attack's got something to do. And I'm doing a comic book that's coming out this year with Joe Escalante. I drew an entire comic book where it's called Fear of a Punk Planet.
Whoa.
Yeah. Yeah. And then later this Christmas, I might have another one coming out with them, but I might be too early. But it's turning a song, another song of the Vandals into a comic book that should come out around Christmas. And that's all I'm going to say what that is. But Fear of a Punk Planet is going to come out this summer. And it's about four punk rock kids in the 90s trying to keep their all ages club open. It's based off a TV series, an internet series that he did called Fear of a Punk Planet. So yeah,
where can people find info about this if they want to find
out? We're going to start announcing stuff about it soon. We're in the final stages of editing, you know, just making sure that we didn't misspell anything and everything looks right and all the panels make sense. So that will probably get announced this spring, like in another month or so. And then it'll come out like we're going to re-release the series, including episodes that didn't ever get released of the Fear of the Punk Planet series. And it takes place in the 90s in a small town called Mullet. And it's four punk rock kids, a hardcore kid, a pop punk ska girl, a crusty girl, and a Epitaph Fat Records skater kid. And like representing all the different kinds of 90s punks. Like, so it's pretty funny and kind of wacky. And that's going to come out. We'll do a comic. We'll do a print version. It'll be a digital comic online as well. And then it's going to come out with the actual video series as bonus content. When we release it this summer. So all that's coming up. We'll probably be announcing that in just another month or so.
Nice. Adam, quickly, what band should we check out in 2015?
Oh, all right. Well, I'm gonna keep on the same kind of weird Toronto kick that I've been on in 2014. That was last year, right? I don't even know what year it is. Sure, 14. Anyways, there's all kinds of crazy noise punk stuff coming out of Toronto right now, and everyone should be tuning into that because there's all kinds of wacky things that are happening there. So you got bands like Adonis, Mexican Slang, The Beverlys, Dilly Dally are coming out of there. So you should all go listen to that stuff. Also, out of Vancouver, Needles and Pins had a really cool record that came out last year, and there's going to be other stuff that they're doing this year. So you should all go listen to that.
And I close up the podcast. You know, Dominic talked about what's happening over at Alternative Tentacles. Let me tell you, I think Alternative Tentacles is in a golden age. World Inferno's last record, phenomenal record. The Frantics reissue, phenomenal record. Arno Corpse, really, really, really good record. Super funny, super clever. And oh, and actually, Jello's going to be putting out a live record, and he's announced this already, a live record of his New Orleans set where he did like all New Orleans kind of music, which is super exciting. I'm really excited for that. But just today, actually, or just yesterday, Alternative Tentacles released the Really Red reissues. Dominic, tell us about the Really Red reissues. Tell us about that band and what track you're going to play, because this band is cool, man. And I think a lot of people don't know about this band.
I didn't know about this band until I started working in Alternative Tentacles. But apparently, in the very late 70s and early 80s, one of the very first punk bands to come out of Houston, Texas, was a band called Really Red. And they were like a straight, they are a Killed by Death hardcore punk band classic. They opened for literally everybody that you all that are listening to me, all those bands that you guys know about. Like, they opened for Black Flag, they opened for Dead Kennedys, they opened for TSOL. They were there, and they would tour, and they played with all these guys, and they were like really political and confrontational, and they were really ahead of their time, and sometimes they got experimental. But, like, you know, things change, you know, like, just like any, some bands become, you know, like these crazy legends, and some bands break up a little too soon or don't tour enough or whatever. But they toured and they did a bunch of stuff, but they ended up, like, you know, breaking up. But Jello always really loved this band. And in fact, like, so he, you know, got to the point where he wanted to put out the definitive collection, because they're kind of like a music nerd's like treasure to find after all these years. It's really hard to find some of the stuff they put out. Like, one label reissued their first album, but that was about it. So Jello went through all the tracks. He mastered and remixed everything that he could. He even pulled from a track that he had on a cassette that they gave him that nobody, not even the band members, had anymore. He had the only copy in existence that anybody knows about of this song that he loved, that they gave him to get on Let Them Eat Jelly Beans. And, he's just always loved this band. So this was like a labor of love. It took like 2 years of Jello like working on it and putting it together. And then he released it. And like, I hear it, and I'm a perfect representative of somebody who had no idea who this band was. And they are really, really awesome. They're just like, they sound like they could have come out now and be blowing everybody away. So check them out. Like, they don't even have promo photos up. Like, they don't have anything. They were just a super punk rock band that just said, screw it. And now we did 3 volumes on vinyl. Volume 1, Teaching You the Fear, which is the first album. Volume 2, which is Rest in Pain, which is a hard-to-find second album. And then Volume 3, New Strings for Old Puppets, which is a collection of 7 inches and rare, like, live clips and everything. And Jello put this together himself, and he wants everyone to hear it. And I agree. I think everyone should hear it. It's really awesome. And I brought in one of my favorite songs off their album, and it's called I Refuse to Sing, and it is awesome. So there you go. Listen to it. Really Red. They're great.
I'm a dude.
right. That was really red. And that wraps it up for the show tonight. Thank you, Dominic, for joining us and for sharing all this cool AT stuff.
Thank you for having me. It's really cool to talk about AT, Kung Fu, and even myself, and talk to you guys about all this stuff. It's awesome. So thank you very much.
All right, John, I will see you in a week.
Yes, you will see me in a week.
Well, not physically.
You will hear me in a week.
You could, like, Skype a picture or something. You don't have to be a stranger.
I could text you. I could Snapchat you.
Snapchat, that's the thing, right? Yeah.
Do you guys want your own chat room right now? Do you need your own chat room?
We'll go offline. So, all right. See you guys later.